Welcome to Health Hats, learning on the journey towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in the awesome circus of healthcare. Let's make some sense of all of this. Where do I make the most choices about my health? I have multiple sclerosis. I make choices about function, activity, pain, food, and mood. All day, every day. Okay, I exaggerate, many times a day. So how do I support myself in making these choices? I experiment, I track stuff, I worry, I connect, and consult. As a person, I approach these choices for myself, sometimes with other individuals, always as an experiment of one. On the other hand, clinicians work with thousands of people making choices, thinking first about people as a group and then as individuals, or the other way around. An assumption of people who work on computerization of clinical decision support, CDS, making medical choices, is that computerization will help clinicians make the decisions faster and more in alignment with research and guidelines. I like to question assumptions. I'm eyeball deep in this clinical decision support business because that's where a lot of time and money is spent and considerable potential sits. I met our guest, Dr. David Edwards, through RTI. That's Research Triangle International, a not-for-profit research organization. David and I both participate in a chronic pain management CDS project funded by AHRQ, the Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research, and conducted by RTI. I found him compassionate and curious and eloquent about pain management, clinician workflow, and patient life flow. Dr. David Edwards, MD, PhD, is a board-certified anesthesiologist and pain medicine specialist at Vanderbilt University Medical Center and chief of the Division of Pain Medicine. He oversees the care of patients in several urban and rural specialty clinics that treat patients for cancer-related pain, chronic pain, operative pain, and patients at high risk admitted to the hospital with pain or substance use disorder. His research focuses on the transitional care of patients in the perioperative period and the functional recovery of postoperative patients. So good afternoon, Dr. Edwards, David Edwards. Thank you so much for joining me. How do you introduce yourself in a social situation?
Hey, I'm David, or David Edwards.
How do you tell people about what you do, your work?
Yeah, social situation usually comes up. Where do you work? And all I say in the pain clinics. And what kind of work is that? Well, yeah, I see lots of different kinds of people with pain conditions or surgical pain conditions. Or
so you're a pain specialist,
right?
Medically, I'm a person with pain, and it seems like managing pain is an art, a science, and a never-ending experiment.
And good description.
How do you balance that stuff with your patients and with your team?
Well, with my patients first, you know, I'll get, just by the normal course of my work, I'll get referred to me from somebody, usually somebody that I know, a colleague or another physician. And I'll just get a bunch of paperwork and I browse it, but I really kind of anticipate my first visit with the person because they can tell me much better what's going on. And it really is hard to make any kind of judgment in the situation of chronic pain without the person telling me what it's like. Reading it on paper gives me a landing spot, but it doesn't give me a plan. So I really just got to wait until I see a person with me and set it up so we have enough time to talk. Because some people, that's what they need. And so you haven't asked me about my approach, but that's kind of how I manage it going into our first meeting.
Okay. Yeah. And so you're looking to hear their story, and then say more. So
sure, I can expand on that a little bit.
Yeah,
I'd say, you know, one of your questions popped for me there and made me think a little bit too. You know, success factors with patients. What makes our first visit together successful? And without having known each other, we got to get to know each other a little bit. It's going to be a therapeutic relationship. And in my mind, chronic pain is not an acute pain. And so it probably been with the person for some time. There's a history there. And I have to get an idea of what that is. So it takes time just sitting there. And most of the first visit is a lot of just hearing and listening. And so the things that kind of make that first visit successful in my mind is to kind of, I've got to figure out the approach that person wants me to take. There are a lot of different people with a lot of different experiences, and they come in with an expectation of the visit that I've got to figure out. Hmm. And an example of that is, and this is just bucketing, and it's not everyone fits in a bucket, but bucketing generally is, there's some people just want the fix. Tell me what to do. I'm going to do it. Thanks. I'm out of here. I'm doing it. I'll come back in a month. And then there are people that are kind of scared and apprehensive because they don't want you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling you what to do. Why don't you hear what I'm hoping that you'll do?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people that want to learn about all the options and make a decision once they've heard everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are short on my end, if we are short of time and we're rushed, we tend to just quickly listen and then prescribe a plan. And that's the opposite of what you asked of what works.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
Right.
So in my short period of time, I got to figure out that. That's the first approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, for me, the part of the art that I see is those clinicians that can build a relationship in like 30 seconds is really amazing to see that.
Yeah.
As the patient, to sort of watch that happen and to see, oh my goodness, this person's good.
Oh, okay.
You know, like that. I think the person who's has been the most helpful to me is that has the approach that nothing works all the time. Nothing, everything will work like for somebody. It's like finding that balance. And I find for myself, if I can have three things in my toolbox, so this is the thing I'll try first. And if that doesn't work, here's the next thing. And then if I'm really desperate, the really desperate is one person described that to me as pocket therapy. Just to know I have it, that it's in my pocket.
Okay,
and just knowing it's there, I almost never use it.
Yeah, it's good to know it's there.
One of the things that never ceases to amaze me is how much the push is to computerize the relationship.
Yeah.
And it amazes me because if you don't have the relationship first, the computerization is not that helpful, if not contra helpful.
Yeah.
But there's so much effort put into computerization. Like, here are the guidelines, and here's an app, and there's all these different apps to use. Because I am who I am, and, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm a patient, and I'm an informaticist, you know, I like to try stuff. And I don't actually think I've ever used a pain app more than twice. Except I would say that the thing that I use a lot is texting with the clinicians.
Oh, yeah.
This is happening, just that, you know, asynchronous sort of real time, you know, like meaning the same day type of, you know, this is happening. I tried this. It didn't work. I'm like freaked out. You know what I mean? Like just having that communication. Like that's really good technology as far as I'm concerned. And then keeping track of stuff. And usually I find paper and pencil is, and sometimes spreadsheets are like way better than apps in terms of let's look at what you did, what happened to you, how did it work. So in your practice, how has that been for you trying to work with long-term relationships?
Yeah, technology use in these long-term relationships has only been successful when it's short-term and we're both looking at it the next time we meet up. For example, we have, you know, sometimes you get a pain block, right? And we want to just see how long it relieves or how much it relieves your pain. What are you able to do? So I have formalized that a little bit in one of my research studies where people get a text every morning for 1 week. And that's it. I just want to know like how they're doing and what their pain is and if they needed to use anything to help. And then we just talk about it next time.
Mm-hmm.
Another example is I personally, you're right, I don't use a lot of health apps because you kind of start to not use them anymore. They take up more time than you have. But, you know, there are things there that help you. One that I use is called Dailyo. And I occasionally have my patients use it too, just for a week. And you basically just saying like, how is my mood today? Like, is it meh? Or is it fantastic or is this crappy? But then you have to like select the things or put in why you think that or what's going on in the day that is making this day so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then together at the end of a week, we'll get together and we'll be like, oof, look at this. You had this fantastic day here. Like what was going on there? How was your pain? Like, did you feel it as much that day? Like maybe that's something we can use.
Mm-hmm.
So I show them that I do it myself, then I ask them to do it with me for a week. And we don't do it for a year. We just do it a few times till we learn something. And if they're that kind of person who likes to be engaged and learn things about themselves. I'd say one other thing that I have appreciated, which is why I'm trying to help here in the RTI group, is that I like when I don't have a lot of noisy data, but I have a couple of like personal things about the patient before I see them or in lead up, like what's bring them back now? Like did something happen or if I haven't met them before, what do they want to be able to do? Or like, just what are they hoping to get from the first appointment? So that I make sure I meet the expectations for them. Give you your money's worth.
Yeah. I think that's a part of that quick relationship building, knowing what's important. Like I know for myself, like I have MS. And so with my neurologist, whenever I see him, there's two questions. Have you fallen? Okay. And are you still playing the saxophone?
Yeah, cool.
They're great outcomes to keep track of together.
Right.
So yeah. How about including like for me, the key person in my team is my wife. And I'm blessed that I have somebody that's a family, that's somebody I live with that's on my team.
That's a good way of putting it.
So you were saying when you meet people, you can sort of bucket expectations. But what about with the person that you live with that's knows you sometimes better than you know yourself and is key to you know, hey, try this. You know, did you try this? Mm-hmm. You know, this is in your toolbox. But there's that range. You know, there's people who are disgusted that their family member is got pain. You know what I mean?
A lot of times they come with a person. And sometimes that person is the one talking. And so it's definitely a balance to see what the relationship is with the person that they show up with. Is it a supportive person that can be relied upon to help remind the person, to encourage them from visit to visit, to, you know, help them buy into some of the goals that maybe they haven't bought into, but they were willing to try?
Yeah,
there are definitely some people who need to step out of the room so you can really hear the voice of the person who's suffering.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy, and it sometimes is really hard.
Yes, I can imagine.
My approach is usually to acknowledge and introduce myself to through them, to the person that they've brought or have at home that's a support to them. But really, I make it a point of like talking to the person whose problem it is.
Yeah.
Really trying to hear their voice and their words.
When you're working with people, do you do this, you know, like I have with my neurologist, that we came up with these two outcomes that are a thread through every meeting, even though we're dealing with pretty much different things every time because, you know, the constellation of issues changes or whatever, mm-hmm. but there's a thread. Like, I don't know that I've ever done that with pain specifically.
I think if I'm getting what you're meaning, I usually am, like you said, your physician kind of knows one thing about you that always comes up and brings it up. And I do try to tell them, I know I need you to give me a pain score, mm-hmm. but this is just a number. I want to know like something about you that maybe you are doing now or weren't able to do before that you enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. And we can use that as our measurement. And usually I'm bringing that up just socially to begin with. Hey, how's this? Have you traveled this summer? I know you love to travel. Mm-hmm. What stopped you from traveling? And so the themes and the threads are usually the functional things that they're doing. At home, not in my clinic space.
Okay.
Like I'll have like physical exam things that'll keep coming up. Like, yeah, you're still hurting right there. This is getting worse. But I'm like, did you make it out? Did you get out and to the mailbox this time? Are you enjoying this beautiful weather? Are you getting outside? This is a perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of the themes are usually functional based.
Yeah. Functional. Yeah. When you go home at the end of the day and, oh my God, you've seen like a bunch of people hurting, what's a good day?
I've learned from myself that having a long list of to-dos is a stressful thing.
Yes.
And so being as effective as we can in our time together, like you said, with our 1, 2, and 3, mm-hmm. you have your 1, 2, and 3, you're going to call me or you're going to message me if you're getting to 3, because I want to hear about it a couple of weeks from now.
Right.
Then we both have a plan in between the times we meet. And I feel good when each person kind of has that and we've been able to use our time effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that gives me energy, despite the fact that the system has brought us all together in a rush.
Yes.
That a patient will say, I felt like I had enough time and that I was able to communicate. And I'm like, wow, I felt like I didn't have time at all, but you felt like you had time. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. The pressure of time in my work, thinking about people making decisions about their health, I talk about the 3 T's, trust, time, and talk, and two C's, control and connection. That those, I feel like always working to maximize those things, and that I am more successful, whoever I'm working with is more successful. We've talked about, certainly we've talked about talk, and we've talked about time and trust. What about the control part? Like, to me anyway, when I talk to people in pain, who have pain, not being in control is a big factor. You know, that the pain is in control, or the doctor's in control. I can't get a script or whatever. But the personally feeling like we're in control makes a difference. How does that come up in your practice?
Yeah. You know, having practiced for a while and seen enough patients, I have a perspective, at least from the physician side of things, that this is a marathon. And even control is gradual, and small wins are still wins. Sometimes the fix isn't today.
Right.
And that can be really frustrating. That kind of message, unless there's trust, can be really frustrating for a person who is expecting more than that.
Yeah. So, now, the connection piece, this is one of the things that in this work with RTI and thinking about, you know, pain apps, the one, and maybe I learned this in my behavioral health practice, is that connection, that when apps are used, when people have sustained success, that probably means that their ups and downs are, you know, not so peaked. You know what I mean? They go up and down like at a lower level than, you know, sawtooth huge ups and downs, is the connection with peers. You know, that there's other people who are, whether it's fibromyalgia, you know, that just comes to mind with, there's some really strong fibromyalgia communities that really help each other manage pain, whether it's, you know, yoga or meditation or how to deal with the kids when you're really hurting. Doctors aren't going to come up with that kind of stuff. Their toolbox is different.
Yeah.
How does that get incorporated in your work as a pain specialist?
I know that you're right. There are Facebook groups and things like that. In our practice, how do we connect the social? We actually don't that much. Mm-hmm. We understand it from the medical literature academically, right? Mm-hmm. And fibromyalgia is the perfect example, because one of the things when I go through there, I bring in a paper that I use all the time, and I give it to the patient. I have it highlighted. These are the things that work. And one of them is being connected and educating yourself. And if you don't do that, if you do that alone, it doesn't work. If you have to do all these things together, and you'll feel better. Mm-hmm. Occasionally I kind of prompt, or I provide resources for that, but we don't have many resources for that. Social connection or interpatient connection.
That's just so interesting to me. I think, sort of like teachers, we sort of expect too much from our doctors. They're good at something, and they're really good at something. There's things they're not good at, and to expect them to be good at it is like a waste of time. And it's sort of like expecting teachers to raise your kids. That's your job, you know, as a parent. So do you find that sometimes the expectation of you is beyond your skill set?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Pain management is broad in the sense that most medical conditions present one of the highest presenting symptoms is pain. Mm-hmm. So it covers a lot of different things, but it's a narrow thing itself. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean that I can fix your kidneys or your liver. But sometimes that's what is expected of me, that although I'm a specialist and I'm helping to manage pain, it's how am I going to fix a problem that's causing the pain that is way out of my control?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a tendency to kind of go down the road of I'm the primary care doctor driving all the things, and it overwhelms me and them, and yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So what should I be asking you about the work that you do that I'm not?
I think a good question always is, and you touched a little bit on that, what makes a person do what they do, or what makes a good day a good day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to be more specific about like what makes me do what I do is that because pain touches so much and can impact so much, that the challenge is hard. And when challenges are hard, the benefits can be great.
Yes, yes.
And so I take it as a challenge when a person is lost, they're usually ending up in my clinic almost as a last hope, right? Some people are afraid of pain clinics and what's going to happen when I go there? I don't even know what that is. And am I just going to get pain medicines? And we all know where that leads.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see a person that is down there and you just imagine like in the bottom of the pit, and every other doctor has said, I don't have anything for you. Go to the pain doctor. to at least, you know, provide hope.
Mm-hmm.
And the potential, like you said, there are many things out there and something will help somebody some of the time, a lot of the time. And we have to find what that is. And to put someone on back on a pathway where they can like start looking up instead of lower in that pit is why I do what I do. It's so hard. And I can imagine if it's hard for me and it's a marathon for me, that it's super hard. I just hope someone like you is mm-hmm. when you're treating me when I need it
mm-hmm.
as patient and as optimistic, or at least, you know, doesn't give up.
Yeah.
And you know, when you build that relationship with a person, it doesn't matter if you're on vacation or you're not around, you feel an obligation for them and yeah, you would do anything just like you would for a good friend. And that's the way it should be.
Mm. Well, thank you. I appreciate this conversation. Thanks for your time.
Can I ask you one question?
Oh, you may.
For the RTI thing, mm-hmm. you've seen it from their end too, right? Like you've seen their prototypes and things like that, right?
Yes.
When I look at it, at the very beginning, it started off very simple because it was, how do we start? How do we communicate better? And a shared decision-making is the term, right?
Yep.
And for, like I said, for me, it's one or two lines before a patient comes to see me about what they expect can save so much, and make sure that we connect on that.
Yes.
Now it's progressing to a whole huge, almost an EMR. And
yes,
I get it that more information sometimes is better, but you brought it up to my concern, which is sometimes more information just clouds it and you end up not using it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the conversations that I've been having lately is, how are they evaluating success? And one of the things that I do in my seat as a patient advisor is that I belong to an organization called the Patient Family Advisor Network. And there's a small group of us within that network that tries to think about what are the key success factors from a patient's point of view in terms of managing chronic pain. And talking with them, like looking at the wireframes for the app and saying, okay, so what do you think about this and what do you think about that? And I think that they also have the same disease, which is it could be so much because people need different things. And so the tendency is to go to more, more, more instead of thinking about what's the nut. So one of the things that I'm talking to them now about is what's going to be your thinking about sustainability beyond the life of the gig, you know, which is the gig is to build this app. Well, that's just a moment. How will, in 3 years, will anybody be using it? And if they do, why? That, not that they have to like measure all that now, but it seems like that's part of the gig.
Yeah.
To think about the future, which is one of the reasons that, again, in my behavioral health experience, the only kinds of apps that I've ever seen that last are the ones that also include social connection.
Yeah.
Because then people are using it because, you know, I mean, while I have great relationships with the many doctors that I have and I have different communication, I really only talk to them for like minutes out of the year, except when I'm in trouble, they're not my go-to people. But I need go-to people because shit's happening every day. Mm-hmm. And so that's more the social connection. Like, I don't know if that's the right word, but
yeah.
To me, anything that doesn't include that, I really like what you said earlier, which is an app that can help build a habit and then be gone. So like I'm a nurse and I've been a nurse for 45 years. And my view of being a nurse is that it's my job to put myself out of business over and over and over again. That's the job at the heart of it. That's the job. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, it seems like unless it's about social connection, that's the job of an app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say, like, if you were to ask me, like, would I be using this app in 3 years from now? And I would say only if it's still giving me that one or two pieces of information that the patient is wanting me to know. That's something I don't get consistently and be really helpful. And out there in the world, if this was on your phone or something and you had all this fancy stuff in it that you could put in all this information if you really wanted to, but coming up to your next visit, you really wanted to remember to talk about the experience you're having right now. So you're going to type in that one sentence and you're going to send it to me. And I'm going to handshake that I got it. And we're going to talk about this next time. That's all I need.
Well, and what I really like about my primary care doctor is that's how she operates. You know, that's the relationship we have is I'll send her a text that this is what's on the top of my mind. And she'll walk in and say, well, I read this and here's what's on the top of my mind. And, you know, then we'll make sure. And I might just see her for 3 minutes, or I might see her for 45, but it sort of depends on what those two or three things are that are on the top of our minds. And I agree that having, for us, she and I, we do it through the text.
Yeah.
But I think it's because we're both into it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work. I don't think she does that with anybody else, actually. Like, I don't really know that, but.
I can't imagine like a couple thousand patients on like texting all day long.
Right. Like that would be overwhelming. Yeah. I mean, that's a whole different kind of overwhelming. Yeah.
There might be a way to take advantage of this technology to make that feasible in a way.
Yeah. Well, the other technology that I really like, and actually, in all fairness, it's the sponsor of my podcast, which is Abridge, which is an app that records the doctor visit. and then gives you a transcript that sort of breaks up the transcript, or it looks for keywords, whether they're care plan kinds of words or treatment kinds of words. And frankly, I remember 5% of what happened in a doctor's visit. I mean, I just don't remember. I go home, my wife says, "What happened?" And I don't know. So it's helpful to have a recording. And we can find, okay, you know, we were talking about T cells today. Okay, here's the thing about T cells. That's the neurologist, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. Or it's about the immunization, or what about, you know, a vaccine when it comes out. But that's been a very helpful. And I use that with the chiropractor. I use that. I actually use it with my massage therapist. I mean, you know, so not just the doctors.
But
a bridge.
A bridge.
Yeah, A-B-R-I-D-G-E.
I'll look that one up.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling our paths will cross again.
They probably will. They've done it twice. So.
Yes. Thank you so much for your time. This has been great.
Thank you for your point of view.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Some of my podcasting buddies reviewed episodes in this CDS, Clinical Decision Support series. One comment pierced my heart. Where is the decision support for patients and caregivers? Hint, they weren't asking about technology. I've also been asking patients and caregivers which electronic tools they use to help them make health and medical decisions. About 20 non-scientific responses included, in no particular order, none, the medical record portal, to communicate with clinicians that use it well, meditation guides, search engines, and health system general info sites, and phone recording and pharmacy apps. The jury is no longer out. For medical choices, health decisions, human interaction trumps technology. I appreciate that David Edwards found that he most desired to use technology to hear the two or three things his patients want him to know in advance of their visit, and that he could handshake that he received it. That embodies connection, control, time, trust, and talk. All-in-one electronic interaction. Beautiful. Thanks for listening or reading. Onward. See the show notes, previous podcasts, and other resources on my website, www.health-hats.com/pod. Please subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. See you around the block.